Welcome back to Aliyah Yomi. Today we are going to be finishing up Parshas Matos with Matos Shvi'i. This is the last Aliyah and it is about the condition of B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven. As you remember from last Aliyah, they made a request from Moshe Rabbeinu to have this deal where they would settle in the Transjordan East Bank lands and agree to send their troops ahead in the meantime to help conquer Israel and then keep their land on the East Bank, which was good for their sheep. Our Aliyah is 23 Psukim long and it runs from Perek Lamebeis Chof to Membeis. Basic summary and then a few points to ponder. So we're told that Moshe Rabbeinu makes a condition with them. And by the way, there's a lot of halachic parameters which are learnt out of this, of what's called a tnai kofel, a doubled condition, and you have to have the tnai is koedem lemaaseh, that the condition comes before the action which triggers it, and it has to be positive before negative. A lot of halachas are learnt out of the way that Moshe Rabbeinu structures his words. The Gemara discusses that at great length, but nonetheless, just this is what Moshe Rabbeinu says. If you agree to come to as an army to battle in Israel with your brothers, then until the end of the conquest, then you can return to your land, and you'll be nekiyim, you'll be cleansed of your oath in front of Hashem, and you can inherit the land which you stand in now. But if you don't do as agreed, you will have sinned. Okay, so Moshe Rabbeinu makes it very clear. And he suggests to them that they build their cities for their children and corrals for their flocks, and they should keep their words. Notice that Moshe Rabbeinu has switched the order that family comes before assets, which is not the way they said it. The B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven repeat the condition exactly as Moshe says it, and they agree to it. Moshe then summons them in front of Elazar, Yehoshua, and the leaders, and makes the condition publicly, and they acknowledge it publicly. It's important because Moshe Rabbeinu knows he's not going to be there to see this come to fruition, so he needs to have it on the record that when they finally do come into the land of Israel, this will be kept. This is going to be another 14 years from now, 7 years of conquest and 7 years of division of the land. We then hear about a description of all the cities that Moshe Rabbeinu gives them. He gives them the lands of Sichon and Og, which they conquered at the end of Parshas Chukas, B'nai Reuven, B'nai Gad, and also half of the Shevet of Menashe, which is new. We then hear a description of all the cities they decide to build up, and we hear about some new conquests which are made. The children of Machir go and make further conquests in the area of Gilad on the east bank of the Jordan. And then we hear about Yair, who conquers an area which he calls Chavos Yair, and then an area conquered by Novach, and a city called Kanas, and he calls it Novach. The city is called Novach after his own name, and that is the end of the parasha. So a few basic questions to understand over here. The most pressing question in this Aliyah is, what does Menashe have to do here? Menashe never made any request to be on the east bank of the Jordan. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu inserting them into the east bank of the Jordan? And it's not just Menashe, it's half the tribe of Menashe. What is going on here? I once heard from Rav Yoel Bin Nun, who said the following. He says that Yosef was the tribe or the individual who is really mechabev eretz haaretz. He really loved the land of Israel. We see this in many ways. Yosef commanded that his bones be taken up to Israel. He was the one who the children of Ephraim broke out of Egypt early to try to fight against to Israel. The Benos Tzlofchad, in fact, Tzlofchad, according to one opinion, it was one of the Ma'apilim who tried to get access to Israel even after they were barred access. That he really loved the land of Israel. Well, Moshe Rabbeinu realized was something very obvious, is that if you put these two tribes in the Transjordan, it's all very nice, they're going to send postcards, we'll do joint cultural affairs together, but slowly but surely the divide is going to deepen, and they're going to secede from the union, they're going to be their own state. We need to have an everlasting connection between the East and the West Bank. So what did he do? He took the tribe which most appreciated the land of Israel coming from Menashe, the firstborn of Yosef, and he splits them in two to really be the cohesion between the East and the West Bank. So because they're only half a tribe, so families would be visiting each other, and cousins and uncles and would always be, and there would be constant traffic between East and West, and that would be able to maintain the connection. Rav Moshe Sternbach, in his Sefer Tam V'Das on the Torah, points out that this may even be a tikkun, a correction of the chait of Mechiras Yosef. Yosef, although he may have been correct in the way he dealt with his brothers and the way he reported their actions to his father, it was well meant, but in the end of the day it caused a tear in the family of Yaakov. The brothers hated him and they sold him down the river, and it turned into a terrible, terrible discord and the ripping up of the children of Israel. And that being the case, this is a certain sense of tikkun. Here, Yosef is ripping himself apart into two, but in order to create the cohesion between East and West. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants of them, is in order at least achdus bein ha-shvotim, ha-shoichnim be'evar ha-yadu and achrem shevetz Israel, to create that cohesion between both sides. Finally, one fascinating observation over here is this individual by the name of Novach. If you've never heard of Novach, that is well-founded, because Rashi points out this is the only time in Tanakh is found. In fact, if you look at the way it's voweled, though, it should be Vayikra Lo. He called it, the city, should have a mapik he, indicating possession. It's missing the mapik, so that means to say it's almost as if his possession of the city was not long-lasting, and that's true. Novach is never mentioned again in Tanakh as well. Rashi quotes Reb Moshe Darshan, who says that the city never was long-lasting in his name. He never was able to maintain this conquest for a long time. And in fact, there's even a very strange cantillation on the law, under the word law, to indicate that something strange is going on over here. Why is this? Why is this so relevant to us? I came across a fascinating observation of Rav Shimon Schwab in his commentary on the Torah, where he points out the following. Look, here you have two individuals. You have Yair and Novach. They both make conquests. And Yair's conquest, we hear numerous times. You hear about it in many other Sefer Tanakh, about the area called Chavos Yair. Chavos Yair was named after him, but Novach never appears again. What was the difference between the two? So Rav Schwab says an incredible insight. He points out that when Novach conquered the city, he identified with his asset to the degree that it became him. Vayikra lo Novach bishmo. He calls it Novach in his own name. Yair was not like that. Yair conquered the areas, and he was successful like Novach was, but he called it Chavos Yair, the villages, the surrounding areas of Yair. There's my possessions, and they belong to Yair. But Yair, without possessions, is still Yair. Novach, without the city, Novach was not Novach. He became that, you know, beautiful plaque on the front of the city which said Novach. That was who he was. When you become, when your identity becomes wrapped and entrenched with an item, with an asset, when I expand my personality to something, and that becomes who I am, then it's very easy to lose that something and to lose your personality. Yair never lost his personality. He had Chavos Yair. I have my possessions, but I'm me. So these possessions don't define me, and other people's opinions about my possessions and my assets and my subscribers and my net worth, those do not define me. Those are attributes which belong to me. So that is perhaps the greatest way to create longevity, is to be independent of one's assets, to be independent of one's achievements, and be a person oneself. That's what's been described to us just in the missing dot, the mapike, at the end of the parasha of Vayikra Lo Novach Bishmo. With this, we close. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day. Good morning and welcome to Aliyah Yomi. Today we're going to be learning Maaseh Rishon, the first Aliyah in Parashas Maaseh. This Aliyah focuses upon the travels of Israel, the first part, and it is in fact reflective of the name of the parasha, which is the travels, Maaseh. Our parasha as a whole has 132 psukim. Our aliyah in total is only 10 psukim long, from Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Aleph to Yud. Let's take a look at the travels described in this aliyah, and then a few points to ponder. We're told the travels of Bnei Israel is from the time they left Egypt until present day, where they're standing on the Aravos Moav, the steps of Moav. And Moshe writes down their travels by the command of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a complex pasuk. Vayichtav Moshe's Moitzoyim L'maaseh. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote down their leavings and their travels, al pi Hashem, by the mouth of God, ve'ele maaseim l'moitzoyim. These are their travels to their destinations. We hear now about the first few. We hear about how they left Ramses, on the 15th of the first month, that is the first day of Pesach. The day after Pesach, when the Korban Pesach was brought, Israel left with a strong hand. Then we hear that the Egyptians were burying their dead, and Hashem smote all their children and deities. We hear that they're in front of the area of Baal Tzafon in just a second. We get to the area of Sukkos, then Esan, and Pi Achiros, which is in front of Baal Tzafon, which is in front of Migdal, which is one of their idols. And we hear about how they passed through the sea and went through the desert of Esan and dwelt next into Marah, and then a Lima, where there are 12 springs of waters and 70 date palms there. And finally, we hear about them camping on the banks of Yamsuf. This seems to be after the Kriyas Yamsuf, because Marah was after the splitting of Yamsuf. So a few basic points to ponder is, why are we being taught about their travels, the nation of Israel's travels specifically here? Rashi brings two options. One is to show the mercy of Hashem, because there are 42 stops in this journey in total, but there are 40 years in the desert. Now, that would sound like they're moving every year, but it's not the case. The first 14 stops were in the first year of their traveling, before the episode of the Meraglim, so that was going to happen anyway. The last 8 were, in fact, after they arrived at Hor HaHar, which was in Chodesh Av, their last year. So really the essential remaining 38 years only had 20 stops, which means to say that there was not a huge amount of upheaval. So it was showing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yes, Hashem made them sojourn in the desert, but it was not this terrible chaos of backwards and forwards all the time. The Medrash Tanhuma brings an example where it describes a father who took a sick child on a long journey far away to get healing. On the way back, the father retraces the steps of the son and shows the son all these places. Here was a place where you bumped your head. This is a place where you needed to sleep. And all the details about the journey on the way back. So it's reliving that journey as well. It's interesting to note that the extra details of this happened here and this happened there are actually the non-central details. So we don't hear about issues like Kriyas Yamsov explicitly and Matan Torah and some of the bigger issues. We only hear about some of the minor issues, which are perhaps the ones that need to be emphasized here. So with all interest noting that the Ramban, Nachmanides quotes the Moreh Nevuchim, that's the Rambam in Maimonides, who says that in the future, as people will live in their air-conditioned apartments in Tel Aviv, and they'll look back, they'll look at history and they'll revise the history. They'll say, it wasn't really a desert. It wasn't really so long. It really wasn't so bad. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu details his journey very explicitly so that we can know that, yes, it was long, it was arduous, and it was complicated, and this was miraculous, therefore. We can't go back. If Hashem had just said very broadly, we were in the desert and we came to the land of Israel without these specific details, then it would be easy to perhaps to look at history through a revisionist perspective. Just seeing the truth should be the foundation of knowing the faith in our HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I mean, says the Rambam, that if we look at all these journeys, and Hashem looked after us in all these places, a nation of millions of people, there should be no question on this as well. What does that curious pasuk mean? Switching the sort of their journeys and their arrivals, what's going on over here? So the Klei Yakar explains, it really should have been direct. They should have left the land of Egypt. They should have traveled and then on eagle's wings been taken into the land of Israel. That would have been Motzayim, leaving Egypt, Lemaaseihem, to their journey, and then they would have been taken from there. But a wedge was driven into the middle and they were not able to get to the land of Israel. There was a break, and that's why they had to do Maaseihem, Lemotzayim, the next part, which is describing, so to speak, the more complex aspect of their journey, which was, we'll call it Plan B. Now, wasn't the whole Torah written by Hashem and dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu? So why over here is the emphasis being that this is what Moshe Rabbeinu wrote down by the dictation of Hashem? That's true of all the Torah, not just the beginning of Parshas Maaseh. So the Aracham explains, yes, actually, it's interesting that in the sequence over here, Moshe Rabbeinu actually wrote this based on the chronological at a synchronistic time, which means to say that every journey Moshe added to his journal. So at the beginning he wrote, they left Ramses, and then he stopped there. And then he went on to describe, they came to Sukkot, and he added on. So each time Hashem was dictating, adding on, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu said at the very end of it, take all your Pinkas, your notes, your journal, and turn it and put it into the beginning of this section of the Torah. So Moshe Rabbeinu's were called sequence by sequence, event by event accounting, which was based on Hashem's words, is now being invested in here. And the Torah is emphasizing that this was based on that. Finally, what are all the details over here? Why do we need to hear all these details? So two which are worth focusing on. One is Asheri Ka Hashem Bohem Kol Bechor Hashem hit with them all the firstborns. So Klei Yakar quotes a fascinating idea that there was civil unrest when the nation of Egypt heard that there was going to be the death of the firstborns. The firstborns themselves revolted and there was civil war between the Egyptians. So Hashem was killing the Egyptians through their own firstborns because of the fear of their own life. That's what you see from this pasuk over here. Another thing that Klei Yakar points out is this notion that they stopped in front of Baal Tzephon. Baal Tzephon was one of their great deities. It was a large statue. So the fact that the nation of Israel stopped in front of it was the reason that Egypt thought that the Jews were confused, the Israelites were confused, and they felt that they could run after them on day three, which is why they ran after them to Yam Suf itself. So these details have a lot of significance in understanding the theological underpinnings of this experience. With this, we close Rishon. We'll continue with the second and last part of the journeys of the Maaseh in the next Aliyah. Have a wonderful and meaningful day. Welcome back to Aliyah Yomi. Today we're going to be learning Maaseh Sheni, the second Aliyah in Parshas Maaseh, and this is really the second part of the travels of the nation of Israel. Our Aliyah is 39 Pesukim long, running from Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Yud Aleph, to Pasuk Mem Tes. It's worthwhile noting that there are traditions like the German Yekish tradition to lane this aliyah or part of this aliyah in a special trop with special cantillation emphasizing the travels that Bnei Israel went through. We hear about the places they stopped in and a few details along the way. So here's what we hear. We hear about them going to Midbar Sin, to Dovka, to Alush, to Rifidim. At Rifidim there was no water to drink. We hear about Midbar Sinai, we hear about Kivros HaTa'ava. We hear about Chaseros, Risma, Rimon Paritz, Livna, Risa, Kaelosa, Har Shofer, Charada, Makelos, Sochas, Sorach, Miska, Chashmona, Moseros, Beneya, Kon Chor HaGidgad, Yotvosa, Avrona, Etzion Gover, that's where Eilat is today, Midbar Tzin, which is Kodesh, and we hear about Chor Hahar. When we get to Chor Hahar, we hear a few more details. We hear it's on the edge of the area of Edom. Aaron went up to Chor Hahar on the first day of the fifth month and passed away in the 40th year. He was 123 years old. And the Canaanites came out and battled with them. We saw this in Parshas Chukas because the Ananei Akoa disappeared. Then we hear about Salmona, Punan, Ovois, Yeha Avorim, Divon Gad, Almon Divlo Saima, Hareha Avorim, and Arvois Moav. And this is the level of the remaining four of the 42 stops that Israel made in the desert. Now, a few basic points to ponder is, number one is, why is that we hear so much about the death of Aaron? There's so little given about all of these different destinations. Why do we hear so much about the death of Aaron? So worthwhile noting, this is the only Yahrzeit which is actually mentioned in the Torah. So the only explicit date we know that somebody died exactly is Aaron. The rest of it is subtext. Chazal gave the tradition, but explicitly in the Pesukim we hear it's the first of the fifth month, which is the Rosh Chodesh Av, which is when Aaron passes away. So the Klei Yakor points out that the death of the Tzaddikim is akin and also is resonant with destruction, which is why the month of Av is a month of destruction, will be a month of destruction for future Jewish history, which is why Aaron dies at this point in time. Aaron who brought together and held together the entire nation. It's also interesting to notice that this parasha is almost always read in the week of Rosh Chodesh Av, and that matches when the death of Aaron was. So just an extra fascinating additional point. Now, what's the point of all these travels? So it is interesting to note that there is a segula, there is an idea, we'll call it some sort of idea which, if said, can help a person be saved from a plague, and it actually is relating to the first two aliyahs of this parasha. Rav Shimshon of Astropol noted this, and he quotes a very ancient segula incantation, which one can say, which saves a person from a plague. What is it? So it's actually in Aramaic, and it reads, I'm going to not the whole thing because it's too long, but just the first one is the following. Kad natalu Yisrael mi Ramses, when Israel left Ramses, lo yadun I yintulu nesukos ule keilasa ule moseros. They didn't know if they were going to go to these three places, Sukos, Keilas, and Moseros. Pakid madbara da'ame yintulu nesukos. And the desert, or in some versions, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, dictated that they go to Sukkos. Then, Misukos Lyodun I intulun Laesam or Lachateros or Laterasara Chola Etzion Gavir. When they were at Sukkos, it wasn't clear if they were going to go to these four locations. Of Pakid Madbara da'ame yintulun Laesam. And then they went to Esam. So essentially, it's an Aramaic version of at every stop, they had various options as to where to go. And where they went was then dictated, and then they went on to the next stop, and they had various options. That's what this, it's all in Aramaic, and it's essentially the 42 journeys with multiple options as to where they went in each journey. And the question is, where do these multiple options come from? Like, these are not sequential places, right? So, as an example, when you look at the options that are given in this incantation, in this statement, when they are in Ramses, one of them is Sukkos, which is in fact a stop number two, but Kailasa and Moseros are much later stops. So why are they the options that are there at Ramses? So it comes down to a fascinating understanding I saw in the Shvilei Pinchas, where there, if you actually map out the 42-letter name of Hashem, it's to be found, actually, this is why on a Friday night when we say Ona B'Koach Gedula Simencha, just before Lecha Dodi, it's 42 words long, mapped out on the 42-letter name of Hashem, the more explicit name of Hashem. And if you actually look at it, the actual letters of it, you map it out into seven rows with six columns, the actual name goes Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Yud, Taf, Tzadi, and those are the first six letters. And if you look at all those letters and you map out a place, each of the 42 places in these journeys matching a letter in Hashem's name, of the 42 letters, you'll see that, let's say, the first letter is Aleph. So that's Ramses is connected the Aleph, connected the word Ana in Ana Bekach. Well, the next letter is Beis. So all the other letters which are mapped out on this matrix, which have the letter Beis in Hashem's name, are in fact the ones that are presented as option two. Sukkos, Kailasa, and Mosera, which are the next three which are reflected in the letter Beis. So that means to say they don't know, it isn't clear, if in the spiritual mapping of this system, they're going to go to the next Beis, which is Sukkos, or the other two, which are the Beis in the name of Hashem. When they get to the Beis, the next letter is a Gimel in the name of Hashem. Well, in Gimel, there are four next options as to where they can go. There is Chatzeros, Torach, and Etzion Gover. Those are all places where the letter Gimel appears in the name of Hashem, corresponding to the 42 journeys, the future journeys they're going to make. Which means to say, if you think about the idea that behind this, is that they are going, and yes, there's a certain degree of flexibility as to where they're going, because there's options as to where they can go, but in the end of the day, they're still in the framework, they're in the matrix of Hashem's name, which is a very comforting thought, if you think about it, where it means to say that we in history, as we travel through history, there are many decisions as to where to go, and it seems like we have options, but ultimately they're converging through the name of Hashem, through Hashem's orchestrating of history to their goal. Which means that these 42 stops are deeply spiritual ideas about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu guides Israel through this period in history and history as a total, as in totality. The Malbim actually quotes this segula of Rav Shimshon of Astropoli, and he explains it in a similar way. And he explains that in the future, this is how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring us through the 42 stations of Jewish history to the final Mashiach as well. We're knowing that we're mapping out on the matrix of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's care and plan, even with the flexibility within that plan. Very profound perspective in trying to deepen our understanding of what seems to be a list of names and places. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.